It's crazy time. It's the news, according to me. Oh, it is a crazy Thursday morning. July 20th, 7:46 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in my home office studio this morning. And it is going to be an interesting day. I can't put on a long show today. I've got some other things I've got to get to. I need to be in Hammond, Indiana in a little bit here. It's about an hour away. Actually, it's a little more than that. It's about an hour and a half away. But I will be heading that direction here shortly. So I've got to get this thing in the can and up on posted and all this stuff I got to do with all the juggling around I do. I should have just done a live show this morning and I just got it over with. Live shows are nice because there's no posting. There's just kind of some post work, very, very little post operation going on with the live show. However, there's a little more to do. Not a lot, but it's just enough. You know, it's that extra 15 minutes that sometimes can make a difference between getting someplace on time and making sure that I have enough in my cup. And I have in my cup this morning, I have some chai with some cinnamon creamer in it. That's what I have here at home. I almost stayed on my boat last night in Michigan City. I have Almond Joy creamer there, which I really like. I like both, but I really like that Almond Joy creamer because I don't get it that often. So, but I have it there, and I have. I'm really hoping I put that stuff away. I had it out yesterday. I'm hoping I put it away. I have a little refrigerator there on the boat, and I have a tendency to leave stuff in there way too long. I have some things to attend to today, but I really want to talk about some things that are going on. And it amazes me, and I wish I could play some clips because just to back some of this stuff up. But it is amazing to me the gyrations that the Democrats will go through to justify or to vilify or to defend their own, the ridiculous statements that are made. And what I'm referring to is the testimony that was on the leftist news media isn't going to post anything about this. They're all just trying to discredit this guy. A Democrat who happens to be a typical Democrat. However, he's not a typical Democrat with regard to doing what's right. He still thinks that there are, you know, rules and things that should be done correctly. And he noticed that there was this strange bias within the DOJ and within the system where, you know, we hear Hillary Clinton,
no one is above the law, not even the president. No one is above the law, except for me. And anybody on the left.
It amazes me that they're getting away with this. This guy goes before Congress and testifies and says all this stuff about how he's kind of stumbled upon this whole Hunter Biden thing because he was actually, I think, what was his name? David Reese. I think his name is David Weiss, David something like that. Who was the agent? He was the ex, Agent X that they didn't know, not the X-Man. He was an Agent X. He didn't let his name be known until he testified before Congress. Because he's been under retaliation from the IRS. He's an IRS agent. They call him a special agent, which looks into certain specific money laundering schemes, especially dealing with international stuff. Very highly paid agent who has extremely high credentials. You don't just get into that position without being kind of a top-notch, top-tier worker. So he's not just some slouch. Now, he might have gotten in there with affirmative action. I don't know. I don't really think that's what happened with him. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. So he ends up, oddly enough, testifying for Congress, and he talks about all this stuff about what I don't think they even gave the backstory in the testimony of Congress, but the backstory is that he was looking into this money cash flow thing that was going on with human trafficking and child pornography, human trafficking, all this kind of stuff that was going on. Oh, and he happened to be over in, you know, looking at Ukraine and looking at a lot of foreign entities, China, and stumbles upon this company that was apparently falsifying records and doing things with escort services. That's the nice way of saying pimps in prostitution. And he was supposedly had some prostitutes on staff. And he was doing all kinds of things, flying them all over the place. Their expenses were being, you know, taken off of his income, of course. All these false deductions he was getting. And it was basically a money scrubbing system for his personal gain. Now, it is well known now, congressionally known, investigations have found that during the time that President Biden was a vice president under Barack Obama, that he set up over 20 shell companies, LLCs, and different kinds of entities, mostly LLCs. Most of them were set up while he was vice president. Not all of them, but most of them were. Now, these were, when you do that kind of thing, now I have had three companies set up at one time because of insurance issues and FAA legal back in the 90s. Here's how this works. Back in the 90s, I had a company where I had a flight training school back in the 90s, early 90s. And the flight training school didn't own any airplanes. So the school actually was leasing the airplanes from me personally. I had one airplane when I first started. And the school owned that airplane. I owned that airplane and I leased it to the school. So I would basically rent the airplane to the school on a per hour basis. And then the school would charge the students on a per hour basis. And then I would also work as an employee. I would work as an instructor, and or any other instructor that I had working for me would fly the plane, and they were on the insurance. The issue became more an insurance issue. So I had to be listed on the insurance. The flight school covered the airplane with insurance. And anybody who used the airplane obviously was using it through the school, so there was insurance there. Now, I was also listed as an additional insured and whatever it was, or subrogation or whatever it was, subrogation, that I had as the owner of the airplane. Now, that was kind of a screwy setup, but it was all done on the up and up. Everything was legit, and there wasn't any weird expenses going on there. It was a very small company at that time. Well, as the company grew, I ended up having two more airplanes very shortly after that. And those airplanes were owned by someone else. It was a family member, but they owned the airplanes, and they covered them with insurance. And then we determined that it was better for the school to just cover the insurance and cover them and their liabilities as well. So the school basically paid for all their insurance as part of the leaseback arrangement. The school paid for all the insurance on all the aircraft. Well, what ended up happening was the school started growing even more. And we had investors, that people wanted to invest in the school. So rather than having them invest in the school, we set up another company. And this company would be the company that would just own the airplanes. So people invested money. I even invested money in it. And the company then would own the aircraft and lease them to the school on a leaseback arrangement. Now, I was not a part of any of the office of that new company, this new LLC. It was an entity, let's call it Entity X. That entity owned all the airplanes, and they also took the investments from people who were investing in the airplanes. So they would put their money in on a promissory note type thing, and they were paid a certain amount of interest on their money. And this was back in the 90s. The rules were, I think, are a little bit tighter now on this kind of stuff. I don't think I probably could do it today. It could be done. There's a few more hoops we'd have to jump through, and some filings of them things would have to happen, I think, at that point. But it could be done. It just has to be done a little bit more controlled by the government, because that's what they do. So, you know, a side note. Here's another side note on a side note. When the government steps in and says all cars by 2030 have to be electric, or all cars by such and such a date have to have a certain amount of emissions, you know, zero emissions or whatever. What is the definition of communism? Excuse me. It's when government has control of the means of production. Is that not there now? With those kinds of regulations, are we not talking about control of production? When you're telling companies what they have to produce, all based on pseudoscience. We'll get into that with John Kerry. The John Kerry thing will be later. So anyway, so the government control is tighter now, of course. It always is. And the what ended up happening was we had all these investors come in, and then, of course, people started finding out. Well, some of the investors were actually pilots or wanted to be pilots, and so they would invest in the company. And if they invested in the company, then in Entity X, they got a discount on their flight training, on the rental of the aircraft. If they were renting aircraft that was owned by Entity X, they even got a deeper discount. So it was kind of a reward system for investing in that. Now, the two companies were separate. The flight school and the Entity X were both separate companies. Well, we initially had, you know, the flight school covering all the insurance. Well, that had to change. And it worked. It was a great system. It really worked really well. People were very interested in it. The interest paid out. The company was profitable. We were able to pay out things. And you locked your money in. It would be like a five-year investment where you'd put in, say, $10,000 for 5 years, and you got paid, you know, 10% straight line every year. So you'd make basically, you know, $1,000 a year on your money over a course of 5 years. So you make $5,000 on a $10,000 investment over 5 years. Pretty dang, even especially in today's standards, that's pretty doggone good. And you got the discounts on your flight training, so you might save $1,000 there. So it was a win-win for everybody. We had the airplanes to use. We had served the public well. It worked out very well. Made everything affordable. We could keep the prices down. We didn't have a lot of interest money to pay. People. It was profitable. The flight instructors made money when they were instructing. The planes made money, or the plane owners made money when the planes were flying. And it was just a good symbiotic relationship between everybody. Worked very well. And there was a press to go a little deeper with it and go into higher value aircraft and start doing more. Have kind of a business club of aircraft where businesses could have access to aircraft and wouldn't have to do aircraft charter, you know, flight air charter type work, which is very expensive. Would have made it more affordable for all these businesses to share a few aircraft. And this happens all the time. We have clubs, flight clubs, where, you know, the flight club might have 50 members and they have four aircraft, and not everybody wants to fly the aircraft all the time at the same time. So you just call up and it's on the schedule, you get the aircraft, and you fly it for whatever. You could do your flight training or whatever. It's much more affordable because 50 people are sharing four aircraft instead of 50 people having to own an aircraft. So because you're not going to use it all the time. It sits in a hangar all the time. This idea probably could be used for motorhomes or RVs especially too, because RVs are very not – you'd be surprised how little RVs are used unless you're living on the thing or if you really spend a whole summer going someplace and doing something. Otherwise, the RV sits around 95% of the time, probably more, 98% of the time. So we have this setup. So we had all this setup. Well, it also allowed us legality wise to get around some rules as well as insurance liability issues. Things were covered, and I showed the FAA what we were doing, and they were like, "Yep, this is completely legitimate as long as the people rent." So you know, it was just it was. it was a very good situation. Now, on the other side of that, we recognized very quickly, because we actually had the discussion, when we set this up, we realized this could really easily turn into a Ponzi scheme. And we had to be very careful that it didn't do that, because we could start taking investors' money and paying off other investors and never have another airplane. We could have become the Bernie Madoff of aviation very quickly, because we had people wanting to put up $1 million. What can you do with $1 million? Well, we can buy this airplane. We can start doing this kind of work. We can, it would require some, we'd want to, kind of business plan that whole thing out and make sure we had enough clients to cover, the interest payments on that thing. It would be $100,000 a year. So what, 100,000, 10,000, whatever it was, 10% of, it's 100,000, 10% of $1 million. So we'd have to make sure we could make that kind of money. Basically, you'd have to have enough flights. You'd have to have at least 100 flights in a year to pay that kind of thing back, which is not unreasonable for a plane that's being shared with several businesses. But you could easily make that kind of money in profit margin with sharing it with, five different companies or something. Well, that's – or have several aircraft and then have, multiple streams of income with different types of aircraft. So it was all being kind of war gamed out and trying to figure out how this would work. Well, this lasted for about a month. We talked about it, and this, we weren't talking about the money laundering or the Ponzi scheme thing, but that came up one time in conversation, and realizing that we probably could get away with just continuing to get investors and just as long as we pay off the other investors, and we just that's how that thing starts. The problem is the end of it. This is where a lot of things, there's a construction company in this area who did the same thing. They started a Ponzi scheme. They were getting away with it for a while, and they got a lot of investors involved. They were finding heavier hitters, people with more money wanting to invest. And they started poo-pooing and shoving off some of the smaller investors, just working with the big investors, and then they disappeared. It was a total Ponzi scheme. Now, so it usually starts off legitimate. This is the way this stuff starts off. We made a deliberate action to say, this is not what we will become. We need to make sure that we have none of this happening here. We will not turn into a Ponzi scheme. We will not go down that road. It would have been very easy to do. Amazingly easy, because we had a front of a legitimate business. And we were doing legitimate business. And then it could have turned into this, because it would have snowballed into this. Once you start paying those kinds of dividends, everybody wants in. And you can't support the investment. We could have invested in a lot of airplanes that wouldn't have been flying, and then we would have gone broke. As it was, we were doing very well on the positive side of the balance sheet. So we wanted to keep it that way. And we couldn't oversaturate the market. We couldn't overextend ourselves. But the temptation was to do that. If somebody offers you $1 million, whoa, that'd be fun to have $1 million to play with. So you lose it all or screw it up. You have to handle that kind of an asset very carefully. And we were looking at it. We were trying to figure out a way to make it work. In our trudging down the adventure of the entrepreneurial world. And I think it could have been done. I think with the right team, it certainly could have been done. We could have probably taken the investment and made it work. However, we didn't do that. So this is how these companies are set up. Now, that's a legitimate way of setting up companies. The Biden family did nothing. There's no legitimate business other than advisory. An advisory business. Tens of millions of dollars people paid the Bidens for advice. Hunter Biden, of all people, to sit on boards and offer advice in countries he was not a part of, in industries he knew nothing about, and in countries where he didn't speak the language at all, was offered millions of dollars and all kinds of benefits and perks. What is the real business that's going on here? Anybody else would have done this, they'd be in prison right now. Because it was obviously a pay-to-play scheme. It was a quid pro quo. There you go. Got it. Can't spell it, but I can say it, sort of. And so everybody around, now this like this one, the Entity X, and I wanted to get back to this, because the Entity X that owned the airplanes, I couldn't have anything to do with that. I couldn't have my name on the paperwork. I couldn't have my name on the, I couldn't even be a board member there on that company, because I could serve as an advisor, a paid advisor, if they deemed, I didn't do that, but I could have been. Now I could be paid also to manage the aircraft. However, the flight school actually managed the aircraft for the company as part of their lease arrangement, because the flight school was leasing the aircraft from Entity X. So part of their arrangement was, we will manage the aircraft, we will provide maintenance to the aircraft. And part of that deal was some of the maintenance would be regular scheduled maintenance would be done by the flight school, and anything that popped up, like any kind of malfunction or something would break, that wasn't the fault of the flight school. It was detailed down to basically everything that could be done. Who would pay for what? That's what it amounted to. If something breaks, if something fails, if something's regular scheduled maintenance, and that was all part of the lease arrangement. So the school would pay less per hour to the Entity X because they were covering most of the maintenance and most of the operation wear and tear overall. However, if the engine needed to be overhauled, then it was time for Entity X to step in and pay for that overhaul. And the flight school would do the maintenance, because they had their own maintenance department. So they had a mechanic working for them. And they had their own thing. So they would send the engine off, and they would do the swap, and then they would settle up, you know, at the end of that. So the Entity X would pay for the engine, and the flight school would pay for the labor. Having said all that, this entity set up the way the Biden family, the crime family, had it all set up was very different. It was a money laundering scheme in which they basically had it set up so that they could keep the IRS. It was in their words, it would take them 10 years to find, you know, where this stuff was. Well, it would take them longer if they're having stone walls in the investigation, which is exactly what was going on. This is what happened with David Meese. Weiss. David Meese was a singer. David Weiss. Weiss. Whatever his name is. Mr. X. So he stumbles across this stuff, and he finds out what's going on with this money, and he finds all these corporations, and it's just, he's looking into it, and he's like, this needs to be investigated further. He reports it to the higher-ups. The higher-ups stonewall him. He turns over actual crimes that had been happening in terms of the way the money was being handled. And of course, they're looking into these suspicious activity reports, the SARs from banks. Whenever a bank, if I go into the bank today and I say, hey, I want $9,000, and I go into the bank tomorrow and I want $9,000, or I start depositing a lot of cash. Like every day I come in with $15,000 of the cash, start depositing the cash. Putting money in the bank. So if I started doing that, I go, there's some suspicious activity here. The guy comes in, he's got kind of like white powder on his nose, and he's got all this money he's taken out. He's handling a lot of cash here. And he's got guys with sunglasses usually follow him in behind him. It looks suspicious. So they're coming in, and they fill out these reports. This is suspicious activity. Now, which is kind of creepy in some ways, and it's kind of, I understand it. You almost have to do that in today's world. So there were like a lot of SARs. There were a lot of reports filled out. I think in the hundreds, if I remember right, it may have been more than that. Of these suspicious activity reports filled out by banks. Well, they started looking into these, and that's their job. They're supposed to look into them. Every time he would report these things and report some suspicious activity, and he would say, yeah, there's something to be further investigated here, it would get to a certain level and it would stop. The DOJ was stonewalling this thing. They wouldn't enforce anything. So he started going to his higher ups, and he finally became a whistleblower. Basically, he went to a, reported the activity to someone else. He got a letter back saying, you may be breaking the law and you could be in trouble for this and you need to retract all this right now. He's doing his job and they're telling him he may be breaking the law. In other words, we're going to punish you. We could throw you in jail for doing your job. Not the criminal you just found, but you for finding the criminal. This pretty much, I think, steeled his resolve at this point. He didn't say this, but I think this is what affected it was the resistance that he got, I think, made it even worse. It gave him more resolve to do the right thing. Now, he's putting himself on the line here. The kind of pushback he's received is amazing. And he knew it. He knew it going in. He's seen what's happened to other whistleblowers, so this is not new to him. Now, this stuff started back in like 2014 or something, or whatever it was, 2012, 2014. And it's been going on this long. The Democrats now, while this investigation is going on, are coming out. Jimmy Raskin, who is, I think, probably one of the, it's hard to set a bar anywhere. But this guy, I use the term liar. It comes to mind. And I know that everybody's calling him a liar or whatever. Everybody's throwing that name around. Just like people say racist and people say liar so easily now anymore that it's just hard to tell who's who in the scorecards. But Raskin has come out. He talked about Ray Epps. He's the one who defended Ray Epps. Well, this poor schmuck, he's one of yours. Why are you picking on him? He shouldn't be picking on him. Was one of yours. Why are you defending him? Since when have you started defending anybody who was on Capitol Hill that day, telling people to go into the Capitol, and you're defending the guy? First, it's the worst insurrection since, 1902. I don't know. It's worse than 9/11. And here's a guy who was out on the street the night before, shouting at crowds. This, by the way, they have these things called magnets. The FBI, it may not have been paying him. I don't know. The FBI, he may not have worked for the FBI. But he may have worked indirectly for the FBI or for another entity or organization or a person. I believe Nancy Pelosi was involved in Ray Epps. Right, that's just my hunch. It's just a gut feeling. There was a lot going on behind the scenes with Nancy Pelosi, her and her daughter doing this documentary thing. They were hoping for worse. They had to blow up, they had to make it into something it wasn't. And now they're going after Trump. They're going to indict him for inciting a riot, for inciting an insurrection, for conspiracy to commit an insurrection. And this is a case of out and out just hysterical reaction. They do not want this guy to run for president. Their heads are going to explode if this guy gets back into office again. I mean, it is going to be a civil war, and it will be one that they start based on an idea about a man who is completely false. But they just think it's going to be the end of the country. They're the ones that are going to end the country because of the way they're going to respond to this whole thing. React, I should say, not respond. They're the ones that are unhinged. It's. So we have this Ray Epps guy and Jamie Raskin comes out and starts defending him, which is highly suspicious in and of itself. January 6th, he was a wanted person initially by the FBI. And then all of a sudden it was dropped. And he had a closed door session with the January 6th commission and was absolved of all his issues. And they had a public one, and it was all these weird, I was just down there, I was a Trump supporter. I was just down there, and I was, I said that, but I meant this, and I texted that, but I really meant this. I didn't mean that. Oh, okay, go ahead and go away. Oh, you were on the Capitol grounds that day? You didn't go in, you didn't go any better. We're going to put you in jail. Because you voted for Trump? Oh, we're putting you in jail. I don't know if anybody can verify that this guy said he voted for Trump or not, Ray Epps. I don't know. He claims to be a Trump supporter. He had a brand new red Trump supporter, Trump hat on. And he had his little backpack and his military stuff on the night before, and he's out there. I thought he had some pamphlets or something carrying around. But, and of course, he was there that day. And he went, when they breached the fences, he followed him in. He was on territory that was supposedly restricted. Didn't go to prison. Now they're going after him. Of course, now he's suing Fox News because they maligned him. No, you did what you did, and they're... Personally, they're supposedly indicting him now, supposedly. What do you think is going to happen? The case will be dragged out. Statute of limitations is going to run out. Whatever it's going to be. This guy will get off without spending a day in prison. And if he does, it will not be in the prison with the other January 6th people. It's going to be... This guy is going to be protected. I guarantee you he's going to be protected. Because he's one of them. He was involved in. So they might make him out as an example, or just because there's pressure on them to do something about him. But it's not going to be the same as the other January 6th. I guarantee you he's worked out some kind of a deal with them already, and he's now suing Fox News because of the way they maligned him by playing his words. By playing the words he said and the things he did and the video of him, that maligned him. Because they were asking questions about the guy. About the suspicions they have. By the way, Tucker Carlson he was on fire at that little committee thing. He was asking questions. He made Nikki Haley look like an idiot. He asked her the right question. Who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? She should know. She was involved in all this UN stuff. Well, I didn't do it. I don't know. I didn't do it. They're all trying to joke around with Tucker, and Tucker was asking the tough questions in such a happy, slap-happy way. And he asks them these tough questions, and the crowd went wild. Same thing with Mike Pence. Now, I have to say, I think Vivek is up for VP. I really do. I think he is a... I think Trump is impressed with the guy. He's never said anything bad about him. And he was asked the other day about some things about the people on the stage. And he basically said, there are some good candidates up there I would consider. Now, he might be playing that as something to say because he wants them to suck up to him. Basically, he's thinking, well, if I tell them there's a possibility that one of them could be a VP, they might not attack me so badly. Now, he does not like DeSantis at all. Everybody was thinking, oh, DeSantis, Trump, that'd be great. I don't think so. I really don't. First of all, DeSantis cannot function in that role very well. I don't think that Trump would have him functioning in that role very well. I don't think they'd get along. Now, would DeSantis make a good president? I think he would make a much better president than we've got now. However, DeSantis is a good governor, who I think, a great governor really, that I think needs to have a little bit more time to figure some of these things out. And I just think he needs a little bit more maturity as a leader. Now, you can say what you want about Trump and the way his leadership style and everything else about him. I don't like the mean tweets. Whatever. Look at the kind of corruption we've got going on now. Kind of stuff that's happening. That didn't happen for 4 years. We're going in the right direction with the economy, the military, a lot of things. We're just going in the right direction. It's just they did everything they could to double down on backtracking that, made it twice as bad as it was before. So we have all this stuff going on now. There's just a lot of things happening with this investigation into the Hunter Biden thing. And it's amazing. The evidence just continues to pile up. And then you've got another Congress lady comes out and says something about racism in this whole thing. Well, you know, so-and-so wouldn't have been treated this way and had this kind of thing and blah, 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 because it's racism. The whole system is racist. This is what she's telling this David Weiss. He's like, are you asking me a question? I don't know. What are you asking here? Are you just complaining about the system? I don't control that. You have a question about the investigation or Hunter Biden? What? Nobody's black here in this thing. Nobody's a minority. But she's bringing this whole thing up that it's a racist thing. That has to come into it. You have to invoke George Floyd and all these other things into the conversation all of a sudden. And then there's one other congressperson said something as well. There were three different individuals who just said stupid things. Just absolutely, they were all saying pretty dumb things, asking stupid questions, but most of them were just asking really dumb questions or making dumb statements. At one point, the witness, the whistleblower, said something about I don't understand your question, or I can't, you know, are you asking me a question, or how do you want me to respond to that? I don't understand your question. Because it was just this rambling on about something, and it made no sense whatsoever. Now, there have been, it's interesting, on the five, there's this one lady, I can't stand listening to her because her voice is just grates my ears. She has no underpinning of any kind of moral conviction whatsoever, but she comes across, she just has talking points and she doesn't even believe what she's saying. That's the way her voice sounds to me. And she comes out and she defends Hunter Biden in this whole thing. Oh, this guy's a liar. This guy's a liar. And some, it goes on and on and on, twists all kinds of things around, saying that this investigation is completely false and wrong. It's all a charade. And in the meantime, that means that, on the other hand, apparently she's never said that Joe Biden's a liar, and he's been flat out dead to rights, caught lying in many circumstances. The idea that Merrick Garland lied to Congress, he did lie to Congress, by the way. He said that this one investigator, this guy that this whistleblower was reporting to, he had full authority, full ability to bring prosecution, to bring the prosecution. Nobody restricted him from bringing any kind of indictment. And yet that's not the way it was. It wasn't that way at all. The guy had no ability because he's a Trump-appointed judge. He had to take that to a filing, and they would not allow him to do it. I don't understand the whole thing. I'm not a doctor or a lawyer or a judge. I'm not a legal system, financial counselor, anything of that nature. Don't get me wrong. Disclaimer. But he couldn't do it. His hands were tied on this whole thing from higher ups. He keeps saying, oh, he's a Trump appointed lawyer. Well, the guy he was answering to was not. And it really doesn't matter if you're Trump appointed or not, because it's Mitch McConnell appointed, basically. Mitch McConnell's been very quiet lately. You'd think he'd be coming out and saying something about it.
Well, we just have to let the investigation take its course.
Really? That's how you feel about this? They're playing games right now. There's a lot of games being played. They're trying to run the clock out on some of this stuff because there's statute of limitations issues, which in and of itself is almost malpractice because they're... If the government allows something to go beyond statute of limitations, it's many times it's done intentionally. It's 99.9% of the time, the government does not allow something to go beyond statute of limitations. They almost consider that malpractice within the industry, according to Robert Gavea. He is a defense attorney. Now, having said all that, John Kerry, who served in Vietnam, was also on the stand recently, being grilled by Congress. One of the most interesting conversations, I think, that the discussions between him and somebody like Comer, came out and asked him, well, because he kept talking about CO2 levels. And now John Kerry has basically said, well, even if we reduced our emissions to zero, it wouldn't, we're too far gone. We can't backtrack what we've done. Because this is, now there are, I think right now we're at an average. I think the according to their numbers, whoever they are, they're saying that our carbon dioxide parts per million or whatever it is that they're measuring their partial pressure or whatever, what they got, is 400 parts per million right now, 400 whatever it is. That's the number that they're using to gauge it with. I don't know what. And there have been times in the history of the planet that it's been up to over 2,000. Now, he will say, well, but life didn't exist. The Earth is billions of years old, and humans have been around, haven't been around. Humans couldn't have survived in that. Oh, really? You don't think they could have survived in that? Now, he won't talk about what the temperatures were during those times when there was 2,000 parts per million or whatever it was. Because, ironically, the temperature of the Earth was not that high. You'd think if it was completely directly related to global warming and climate change, that much carbon dioxide in the air. Now, I happen to know that is absolutely false. I can be in a room with 2,000 parts per million carbon dioxide, and I can live. I can survive. I can actually breathe and function just fine. What matters is the partial pressure of oxygen in the room. You may not feel good. You may not be able to function as well, but I guarantee you, you're going to live with 2,000 parts per million. 400. And there is a balance where you get too low on the carbon scale, carbon dioxide, and plant life will die. Most plants, not all, most plants, I think about 80% of the plant life on the planet depends on carbon dioxide. In fact, they convert carbon dioxide to oxygen. Amazingly enough. Isn't that amazing? But it all happened by accident. I wasn't created or designed that way, of course, as I say with my tongue on my cheek. So we have John Kerry, smartest man in the room up there, telling us everything about, the planet. He makes this statement about, even if we reduced all carbon emissions right now to zero, it still wouldn't. We're too far gone. Well, what are you proposing here, John? Are you proposing that we somehow go in and suck carbon dioxide out of the air? We have carbon dioxide scrubbers of some kind? Which would just be, we could just plant more plant life. Grow more plants in these areas that are melting. This fertile ground up north, where we can now farm further north, which will create less CO2. The problem here is that CO2 has not been determined as the cause of global warming, of greenhouse affecting. Because, for a while it was global cooling, and now it's global warming, and then it was climate change. Climate's changing. Forest fires are ripping through everywhere now. There's forest fires breaking out everywhere. Yeah, because of poor management. Because all these tree huggers would say, you can't chop down any trees. Well, if you don't chop down the trees, guess what ends up happening? They catch on fire and they all burn. Uncontrolled. It happens in California. It happens in Canada. All the places where they have these tree hugging, can't touch the trees, forests, and then they all burn because they are mismanaged. It happened in Florida for a while because there was a bunch of tree huggers down there that convinced the government, and then, of course, now they're finally starting to manage some things down there. You haven't seen anything with, major. There's always going to be a forest fire somewhere. It's just lightning strikes or whatever. Humans do something stupid or whatever happens. It's forest fires happen. Even a compost pile can catch on fire. So we have all this stuff happening. And John Kerry is asked about the part. Well, finally, this guy who was asking him questions, he said, well, what is the correct amount of particulate we should have in the air? What What percentage of carbon dioxide or parts per million, whatever it is, should we have? Is 400 the right number? Well, it changes all the time. He said it changes all the time. So the correct number, that he never answered the question. All these scientists are talking about, he goes, oh, so you're saying that this, he kind of come back on the guy. He was like, well, you're saying that this doesn't happen. And he said, the guy goes, no, not all scientists believe that.
Oh, well, 98% of the scientists on the planet agree with this. This whole global warming thing.
Okay, first of all, let's back up the train here a bit, just a minute. What kind of scientists are you talking about? Who are these people? How do you qualify to be a scientist? You know, Bill Nye, the science guy, when he started his little show, was an engineer. He wasn't a scientist. What does it take? At what point do you get a little star on your little lab coat that says, I'm actually a scientist. You have to call me a scientist now. At what point? How do you define a scientist? Is my biology teacher a scientist? Is the guy who teaches me science in school, in high school? I had a science teacher in grade school. Was she a scientist? Was I being taught by someone who wasn't a scientist? Are they a certified scientist? And how do they determine what the criteria are? Are they just going along and signing on these theories, these consensus forms to get grants? Is there something else going on here that we need to know about? Do they know do they even understand weather patterns? I guarantee you, as a pilot, most pilots out there, if I want to know what the weather's going to do, I'll ask a pilot. Because they study the weather, an active pilot, somebody who's been flying, because they study the weather patterns all the time. They understand what's going on. They fly through this stuff all the time. I've seen pilots do better at forecasting weather in certain regions than the weather forecasters on the television. Because they understand what's going on with the air currents. They fly through this stuff. It becomes a part of your environment. You get it. You see where the moisture is. You see where the moisture layers are. You see where the winds are carrying over certain parts of the ground that are either frozen or water areas or, you know, wet moisture. All the stuff that's happening there. You see the convective activity. You see all this stuff. Because you have to fly through it. Or around it, or above it, or whatever you're doing, and you see the reaction that it has as it's blowing through, and what the wind, you know, the upper atmosphere winds are doing, and the jet stream, and all that stuff. And meteorologists rarely go up in the sky and actually fly around and look at this stuff, and have to, their life depends on knowing what's going on up there. They come in and give the forecast based on a computer model. And they go home. If they're wrong, they come back the next day and try to give another one. And they get paid for this, to be wrong 80% of the time. It's amazing. But the these scientists, you know, first of all, who are these people? Are they actually meteorologists or is it geologists and physicists and engineers? Bill Nye, the science guy? Are these the people who are out there telling us that all the global warming is now man-made? And that's the difference. That's when John Kerry was asking, well, the difference is that man is doing this. Man is doing it this time. It's not happening naturally now. It's man doing it. Oh. So it happened naturally before. And man is still here. Humans are still here. But you're saying that because humans now are causing global warming, that it's a bad thing now. And that you can prove it's man-made. I say we don't know. I don't know. I don't know who to believe and what to believe. All I know is we don't know what's going on. I don't think they know. It's all a scheme to get tax money. That's what carbon offsetting is. Carbon offsetting is a tax. John Kerry justifies his flying around in private airplanes
I fly around in private airplanes because I need to get the job done. We carbon offset. So all these things that we're doing, we may be creating carbon here, but then we plant 10 trees. Every time we fly our jet, we plant 10 trees. And that carbon, that offsets our carbon. We're responsible with our, Oh, really? Is there any accountability to that? Do you have a website on the government pages anywhere? Who do you answer to? I answer directly to the president. Oh, okay. So your policies are his policies. This is much like Mayorkas. They're talking about impeaching Mayorkas because of the things he's done on the border. Who do you think he answers to? Who really should be impeached? What do you think is going to happen if they impeach Mayorkas and fire the guy? What do you think? If Mayorkas left today, who do you think is going to take his place? Mayorkas too. It's going to be the same guy in a different suit with a different name. Because the policy is not going to change. The policy comes from the top. It is Joe Biden's policy on the border. Mayorkas can't get away with, they can't throw this guy under the bus and be a scapegoat. It is Joe Biden's policy. They didn't blame, who was the guy who was in charge of the border for a while under Trump? They didn't blame him. They blamed Trump. The Republicans need to get their act together here on this and stop asking Mayorkas questions and start saying, it's not your decision to make. It was somebody told you to make that decision, and it was your higher up. You work on his behalf. The mess at the border right now is Joe Biden's mess, period. It's not Kamala Harris. It's not Mayorkas. It is Joe Biden. He's the one who should be impeached for all the stuff that's going on down there. 85,000 children are unaccounted for right now, missing. They don't know where they are. 85,000. I'm not saying every one of them is in the slave trade or in the child predator hands, but if 1,000 of them are, that's 1,000 too many. And that's 1,000 on Joe Biden's hands because of what's going on. We have, speaking of the child thing, I want to talk about the Sound of Freedom. I've tried to stay away from this thing so far. By the way, there's a song right now. It's Try That in a Small Town, I think it's called. Apparently the CMT, Country Music Station, whatever it is. Let's see if I can find this somewhere. CMT, Try That in a Small Town. Yeah, right there. I just put in try and it comes up as the very first thing. Jason Aldean has this song out and I just heard a little bit of it. I might play a little bit of this song. I'll probably get in trouble for doing it, but talking about the riots and all the stuff that's going on and the treating of cops and stuff. And he's like, try that in a small town. Maybe I can pull up the lyrics. If they have the lyrics on this thing. It's like this thing already. Where'd it go? I'm gonna pause it right there. Let's see if the lyrics are in here. Here we go. Sucker punch somebody on a sidewalk. Carjack an old lady at a red light. Pull a gun on the owner of a liquor store. You think it's cool. Well, act a fool if you like. Because out a cop, spit in his face, stomp on the flag, and light it up. Yeah, you think you're tough. Well, try that in a small town. See how far you make it down the road. Round here, we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't try that in a small town. It goes on to talk about that kind of stuff. And it's being called a racist song now.
And CMT is basically, and of course, his music video plays all these scenes from, I don't know if they were actual scenes or if they were reenacted scenes in the video of the riots that were going on, George Floyd riots. And he's not backing down. He's doubling down. And I, you know what? I don't usually buy country music. Not at all. I feel like buying every one of this guy's albums, t-shirts, whatever he's got, and about 10 copies of the singles. Yeah. This is, again, guys being censored. Just, it's aggravating that we treat him this way. For just stating the facts and stating the way it is, because this is the way it is. If this kind of activity ever starts coming to the suburbs, to the small towns, you're not getting away with this. Guarantee you. Like you said, see how far you make it down the road. I know the people in my community, in my county. You hurt one of our law enforcement officers. You start treating them this way. Heaven help you. Because heaven won't help you. Apparently you're going to. Anyway. But, you know, this doesn't happen in the big cities and the woke places where this is. Oh, it's just a protest. Just protesting while we burn your place down. We're not committing any crimes because we're just protesting. We have a right to protest. It's peaceful, most fiery, but mostly peaceful. If that would have been Trump supporters out there after the election, burning places down, rioting, what do you think would have happened to them? The media would have been out there encouraging the military to come in and shoot them all and praising the military for doing it. Because up is down, right is left, in is out. It is upside down. Having said all that and having basically almost empty in my cup, and I've talked almost an hour, and surprisingly enough, you've listened. If you've gotten this far, you've listened to this whole thing. I want to thank you for listening. By the way, it's still Thursday, but I must get on my way. I have about 45 minutes. I need to be out the door, so I have a lot to do this morning before I get heading out here. I do want to thank you for listening, for subscribing, for praying for our nation, praying for each other. We need to really keep each other held up in prayer through this whole thing. Just understanding what God's plan and purpose is, and keeping ourselves humble, I think, is more important than anything. And allowing God to have his way in everything that's going on. And we need to trust in him. It's just, he's got the whole world in his hands, and that is not a cliche statement. That is an actual fact. He's, interesting stuff. We'll talk more about the Sound of Freedom later. God bless. Have a great week.